I try not to pay too much attention to those, really, because I think they can be a little bit subjective and perhaps not that scientific when they're put together. But then I would say that because I wasn't on it. So, you know.
Welcome to The Underground, the podcast for garden sector professionals, where we discover the trailblazers and innovators who are shaping the future of garden care in the UK. From plants to products, wildlife and the environment, we'll dig deep to bring you the inside story. So, without further ado, let's get down and dirty.
So on this week's show, we're thrilled to welcome Vicky Nuttall, Director of GEMA, the Garden Industry Manufacturers Association. Vicky, welcome to The Underground.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
I guess what I want to do is just start with a really simple one. Is it GEMA or G-I-M-A?
GEMA, definitely GEMA.
Definitely GEMA.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
And can you just sort of give me a bit of an overview of what the role of GEMA is within the industry?
Yeah, of course. Well, we're a suppliers-only trade association, and we've been around for over 40 years in various different iterations. It's all about suppliers who are very much focused on the UK garden retail sector only, but that includes sort of high street, DIY, online, as well as garden centres as well. We've got around 160 members. We represent a turnover of around 4.8 billion, we believe. And it's businesses of all shapes and sizes, large international brands, SMEs, all the way down to startups as well. So it's really quite varied. We cover all sort of areas of dry goods, I would say, that go into this sort of garden retail environment, including seeds and bulbs. But we don't really look after anybody with live plants or anything like that. So it's very much dry goods, I suppose, is what you'd call it, and landscaping and things like that. Although we do have other members who are not from the gardening sector, because we do have good relations with garden retails, as in garden centres. So we have some members who are sort of on the sort of periphery outside of gardening. But so quite broad, really.
So what are the sorts of things that you do as a trade association to support your members?
We have a sort of mantra, which is five key areas that we cover, which sort of helps us narrow it down a little bit in terms of what we can actually provide support with. So we offer saving, so opportunities for members to save money, whether that's on buying goods and services, but quite often it's around exhibitions as well. We try and connect members as well. So that's all about networking. So that's networking within the membership, but also trying to connect them with potential customers as well. So with retailers. We try and help to promote members as well. So that's promoting their businesses and their brands. We represent the supplier's voice in the industry as well. So whilst we're not a lobbying organisation, as in the traditional government lobbying, we do lobby within our industry, I suppose, in terms of if there's particular issues. And that certainly came to prominence in the pandemic when we did a lot of sort of lobbying and support for the supply chain, if you like. And, you know, that opened up a whole new sort of ball game communication channels for us. And then finally, it's supporting. So that's a bit of a catch-all, really. So it's lots of supporting services that we provide to members, whether that's market information advice on the industry and the sector, training, workshops, loads of free webinars. That's obviously picked up during and since the pandemic. We do lots of sort of webinars on lots of different topics. That's the five key areas. So it's saving, connecting, promoting, representing and supporting. That's how we sort of define our services, and they're quite commercial. Our articles of association say that we are there to support our members' commercial and trading interests. So you find that a lot of the support that we provide is geared around the sort of sales, commercial, marketing, that type of area. Although we have done a lot recently on things like packaging, so EPR, the changes in the EPR regulations and things like that.
You mentioned about lobbying there, and you said that sort of came to a fore during the pandemic. Can you just tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so we're not a lobbying, as in a government lobbying organisation, because we're such a small team, we just don't have the resources. But obviously, during the pandemic, the HTA, who we'll perhaps talk about a little bit more in a minute, you know, they are very much the public face and the government facing organisation and do a lot of lobbying. And so we worked alongside them. We give our voice to their, you know, to their cause, and along with other trade associations. So we all pulled together, and they did a fantastic job to lobby government to get garden centres reopened as an essential retailer during the pandemic, which was, you know, so many people were clambering, wanting to spend time in their, well, having to spend time in their garden, so wanting to garden, needing gardening products. So, you know, thankfully we were able to work with them, and they did, like I said, they did a fantastic job to get the garden centres open. So that's how that sort of came about. But since then, you know, I think the channels of communication across our industry and through all of the different trade bodies and organisations is really, really very strong. And, you know, we have a lot of initiatives that have come out of that, you know, where we have catch-ups regularly across the industry and share, everybody shares a sort of, obviously not commercially sensitive information, but general information about, you know, challenges and what's happening in the industry. So, you know, there's some good that sort of came out of that.
Oh, thanks for that, Vicky. As you said, you talked about the HTA briefly. So how would you say that GEMA complements the HTA? Do you work together? Are you related in any way? And who's been around the longest?
Oh, who's been around the longest? I think HTA have probably been around the longest, because GEMA, way back, GEMA originated out of the HTA. So I think it was perhaps a smaller group within the HTA. But at some point, a long time ago, before my time, GEMA was established as an independent organisation. And it's well over 40 years ago, but I'm not sure of the exact date, unfortunately. But we are completely independent to the HTA. And we're governed by our own, you know, our own membership. We actually have a council of 12 volunteers who are made up from within the membership. And they, we're a small team, but we, you know, but they make sure we're steered in the right direction. But in terms of, you know, working with the HTA, as I mentioned, we'll work with them as and when's necessary. But we do actually have co-ownership of the Garden Press event, which is an industry event focused on connecting horticulture and garden businesses with the garden media and with influencers. But when we're talking about the HTA, their focus is really more so on retailers and growers and landscapers. But our focus is on the suppliers. So we sort of, we're complementary, I would say. And I think HTA give us a voice outside of the industry, really. You know, I've already mentioned their lobbying work, but, you know, they did some fantastic lobbying in lockdown. But more recently, they've done a lot of work on cross-border trade, and more recently, obviously, lots of work around the peat debate. And we would very much collaborate with them on any lobbying activities if our voice will give weight to their arguments.
Vicky, we live in strange economic times. What would you say are the key challenges that the sector faces right now?
I think one of the key problems for everybody, regardless of what industry you're in, what part of the supply chain, whether you're in horticulture, gardening, or any other industry, is really the cost of doing business. You know, we've seen some incredible interest rates, you know, that none of us have really seen in recent times have a massive effect. Although today, it's possibly going down. Inflation's certainly going down, isn't it? So hopefully the knock-on effect of that will come to bear. But, you know, those inflationary pressures have been seen across the whole supply chain, whether that's energy costs, personnel costs, the increase in living wage. All businesses are facing this challenge throughout the whole supply chain, and that includes retailers as well. But for suppliers, and particularly branded suppliers, another challenge that they've got coming in 2024 are extended producer responsibility costs. They're going to start hitting the balance sheet in 2024. So that's a massive change from what most suppliers have been working with up till now. You know, they've needed to start recording all of the packaging materials, not just plastic, all of the materials that have used in packaging, and particularly branded packaging as well. And they're going to be financially liable for all of those throughout the whole supply chain, whereas before it was split across all of the supply chain. So that's going to start hitting the balance sheet for branded suppliers and some branded retailers as well. So if retailers have their own brand product, it's going to impact on them as well. And then I think as the economy starts to try to reset itself after the pandemic, you know, and all of the global and political unrest that's around, all of those things feed into it being a difficult time for anybody who's running a business. And you start to see reports about the increase in the number of businesses that are going into administration. We've already seen the demise of Wilko. Dobbers have just published a £130 million loss. And all of this just makes everybody nervous, to suppliers particularly, you know, who each year have to invest millions of pounds in pre-season stock build in the anticipation of what's to come. Without real guarantees, you know, obviously there are pre-season orders going on at the moment. But yeah, everybody's a bit nervous about that at the moment. And, you know, we could see some big names in trouble in the wider retail landscape as well, as that whole area sort of shifts and changes. You know, there is a natural evolution in any sector, in any industry, and obviously internet and everything else that's going on. But I think some of those particular pressures are coming to bear now to some big names, mentioning no other names at the moment. Having said all that, one of the things I think the pandemic did help with, obviously we had a huge interest in gardening, and I think that probably forced the supply chain to become a little bit more efficient. And so that will have helped with some of these challenges that are being faced now, you know, with the huge peaks in demand that came in 2020 and 21, and all of the fluctuations that we're seeing, you know, that manufacturers and suppliers had to make changes and had to improve things. So those, like I say, will be coming to bear now. And possibly, you know, also help build some cash reserves as well when times are tough. But yeah, it's an interesting time at the moment. I think, you know, everybody's starting to feel the squeeze, even the retailers. I mean, I don't want it to sound too doom and gloom, but there are lots of challenges. But I think if, as long as you are aware of them, you can sort of try to navigate around them. And I'd like to just counter some of this with, I'm no expert on all of these things. I'm not an expert, but peat, you know, the peat-free compost issue, we're still toing and froing with the government in terms of what's exactly happening with it. Thankfully, from a domestic gardening point of view, you know, suppliers have already acted, and, you know, there is a lot of peat-free compost coming through. However, you know, we're still seeing professional and commercial growers struggling with getting successful results using peat-free. And it's only going to be harder for domestic gardeners and amateur gardeners. Gardening's not a quick fix hobby, really. I mean, I know, you know, you can do a quick fix, but ultimately gardening isn't a quick fix. And if gardeners start to see failures coming through, they may well look for other hobbies and pastimes. So we've got a huge job ahead of us as an industry to try and re-educate gardeners on the use of peat-free compost, the use of watering, water harvesting, all different techniques that are coming through.
Oh, yeah.
That's one thing. Do you want me to go on?
If you have others.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Climate change. Again, no, I'm no expert in climate change, but it's happening. You know, we can see it all around us, and those unpredictable weather patterns are all becoming even more unpredictable. And that will have lots of challenges for us as suppliers, for retailers, not only for the gardeners as well. So, you know, that's going to impact on all of us. And, you know, will the key selling seasons change ultimately? That's probably a long way off, but can't see that changing anytime soon. But we will see products on offer change. Plants that are on sale will be probably affected as we do move towards sort of Mediterranean style planting. I think another thing that's coming around the corner, hopefully not too soon, but retail landscape, you know, we are blessed with a really strong independent retail sector, as well as the high street, as well as internet, as well as DIY, etc. We have a really strong independent garden centre base, and quite a lot of those are still family run or, you know, businesses. And I think the problem that we've got is succession planning. You know, garden centres grew up out of market gardens, didn't they? Sort of 70s and 80s. And if you do the maths, obviously the people that set those up are, you know, looking to retire, if not already retired. And who do they pass the garden centre on to? We're already seeing some very successful second and third generation businesses, you know, continue. But that I think potentially is a challenge coming around the corner if nobody does want to take up, because of all those other challenges I said, you know, the cost of doing business, and it's harder to do business. So I think, you know, there's increased legislation and bureaucracy and all those things around it. So we need to sort of be aware of that, I think, and what might change on the horizon. And what I'd love to see is some kind of startup fund for new entrants into the garden retail arena, because you've still got entrepreneurs, you've still got people that love gardening and horticulture. You know, there's a lot of young people that are interested in the sector as well. You know, so I'd love to see something like that provided some, maybe a small fund, or just got people, you know, just provided them with all the information and all the advice that the industry's got. You know, there's years and years of information and knowledge and wisdom. So if we could sort of pass that on, that would be fabulous. I mean, we do a similar thing, but we have a seed corn fund that we give out once a year. And it's a sort of competition run around Glee time, and in conjunction with Glee, actually, for somebody that comes up with a new invention or a startup in the sector. And they get a very modest fund of money from us, but we give them free membership, and then we just give them all the information and advice and really just help them along. Because, you know, if you're new into any industry, there's all sorts of nuances about it, and that, oh yeah, or who the buyers are, you know, just basic information like that, that we've got. So I'd love to see something like that on the sort of retail side.
So where would you see that coming from, Vicky? Who would run that startup fund?
I'd have to be careful, because I would suggest that perhaps the HTA should run it, but I've not talked to them about it. So, you know, I don't want to get them into trouble or anything.
You heard it here first.
It's just an idea I thought of recently. I thought, well, that would be fabulous. But yeah, I think those are some of the challenges that we've got. But I don't want to sound too doom and gloom, because I think we do have so many positives about our industry and about gardening and horticulture in general. Some of our garden centres are world leading, really. You know, they're very much comparable with some big, fantastic centres all around the world. And they're worlds apart from, I have to say, some of the dismal high streets that are around now. You know, department stores are really struggling, aren't they, now? And I believe that's because it's all shifted to sort of garden centres have sort of taken on that mantle that, you know, they're out of town, they've got free parking, they've got fabulous cafes, they've all got Wi-Fi, you know, they've got not just gardening, it's all sorts of products on offer. They're big, airy spaces. So I think, you know, we've got a lot to be thankful of in that respect. I think, sorry, you didn't ask me about the positives, but I'm going to talk about them anyway, if that's okay.
That's good. And that was going to be my next question anyway.
So it's really positive that we have really good footfall, I think, in garden centres. You know, one of the biggest customer groups for garden centres is the Grey Pound. You know, we are an ageing population. There's no doubt about that. All the stats show us that, and we can see that. And also, you know, anybody who's drawing the pension is securing the knowledge for the time being anyway, that they've got the triple lock in place. And so their pension is secure. So they've still got that to spend. And obviously, all the, you know, health and wellbeing benefits of gardening are coming to the fore now, and everybody is sort of recognising that. Even the National Health Service is recognising gardening as a health benefit, and is prescribing it in some instances as well. So there's lots of activity on social media channels around gardening as well. So yeah, I didn't want it all to be doom and gloom.
Well, let's keep on that positive note. Is there anything you're most looking forward to coming up in 2024?
What I'm looking forward to in 2024, I'm looking forward to really getting out to see members. I'm particularly keen on when a new business or member joins us and is a seed corn fund, you know, potential. That always really excites me. In fact, we launched a new sort of initiative that we've been trialing this last year for any new members that join us, called a buddy scheme. And we've been buddying up members of our council with non-competing companies that are joining us and coming in, so that they can tap into a bit of knowledge and also just network with somebody within the industry as well, just to sort of steer them and guide them. So I'll be interesting to see how that evolves, actually, because I don't want to overload the council, but they seem to be quite enjoying it at the moment. We have a busy calendar of events. We've got a busy calendar of webinars and things coming up in the first quarter. We've got, you know, our usual, we've got a day conference in March, we've got a golf day in June, we've got our big GEMA Awards dinner in November now. We've just had to shift the date around a little bit because a few other things have changed. So I'm just looking forward to another busy year, really.
We're going to take a short break, but we'll be back very shortly with more from our conversations with Vicky Nuttall. But in the meantime, it's time for Kate's Corner, where we discover the musings and sage advice from the Gardener Guru. Kate, what have you got for us today?
Quick question, Phil. Are you a galanthophile?
Well, that's a good question, Kate. I have absolutely no idea.
And don't think a lot of people do, but at this time of year, when we're all feeling a bit down, Christmas is over, January, February blues, the flower that you want to go out and have a look at is the snowdrop. The snowdrop's Latin name is Galanthus, and it is a massively collected plant. So it's really, really expensive to buy these interesting varieties. So people who collect snowdrops are known as galanthophiles. And it's really interesting because they're such a teeny tiny plant, teeny tiny bulb, but people absolutely go wild for snowdrops. And I think this time of year, I can understand why. They are so gorgeous. They really brighten up the gloomiest of winters. So if you haven't got space for any in your garden, then get yourself out and go and visit a lovely parkland that is full of these wonderful white drifts of snowdrops, or galanthus, as we're going to call them. One of the best places to go and see them is Gloucestershire, Colborne Park. But there are many, many places around the country from kind of mid-Jan through to the end of Feb where you can go and see these incredible displays. Quick tip, though, if you want to grow them yourself, it's always best to buy them in the green rather than as dry bulbs. So that means buy them this time of year when they're kind of just when they're finishing flowering, or you can just spread them from your own garden, dig them up now, place them around, and they should start to spread. But try not to buy them as bulbs, buy them as fresh plants. That's always best. But yeah, get out there. They look so delicate, but they can withstand whatever Mother Nature throws at them, and they're bound to make you smile.
Oh, that's great. We'll definitely be keeping an eye out for those then. So I will become a galanthophile. And back to the show. So you mentioned earlier on, Vicky, about the Garden Press event. Can you just tell me a little bit about that and what makes that event so special?
I don't know if we might be fairly unique as an industry, but we have a lot of people who make a living out of their hobby, writing about their hobby, And I think 19 years ago, the Garden Press event was created to bring together horticulture and garden businesses with the garden media. And obviously now influencers as well on social media channels. I like to describe it as a boutique one-day exhibition. It takes place annually in February at the Garden Press event in Islington. And luckily, we do have a really quite active community of writers and, like I say, now influencers that we can tap into. In fact, there's a whole membership organisation called the Garden Media Guild purely for that. And so we do work quite closely with them for the actual event. And the timing of the Garden Press event is February, because really all of those people that have been writing have been hibernating over winter and are desperate to come out and meet all their friends and their colleagues. But equally, they come along to the press event to meet people who can provide them with content for the year ahead, whether that's in the traditional press or whether that's collaborations on sort of social media channels. So it's a great event, actually. And I say, I think it was about 7 years ago, we, together with the HTA, we bought it off the original founders. And, you know, we have a lot of our members who exhibit there. So it's a really great fit for us, actually. So, and we try and keep it very affordable for members to attend. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that, actually. That's 20th of February, so that's not going to be long. That's going to be with us before we know it.
Not too far away at all. While we're talking about events, what are your feelings about Glee? Does GEMA have a presence at Glee that they do things there?
Yeah, so we have a long-standing sort of relationship with Glee. We work very closely with Hive, who are the organisers, as it's a very key event for a lot of our members. We generally have around 100 members there who are exhibiting out of, so it's probably about a third or a quarter of the total exhibitors there are GEMA members. So it's a really, really important event and date in the calendar. There's always lots of buzz and chatter about the industry, but key to it is the fact that it's a buying event. So it's, a lot of the buyers will attend and it is very well supported by them. In terms of our participation, we have the GEMA Business Lounge, and we also host, on behalf of the organisers, we run GEMA hosted meetings, which is like a speed dating sessions for the exhibitors and the buyers. So we recruit the buyers to take part. And Glee is always a hot topic of conversation, so it's always quite interesting to hear. People can get very, very passionate about it. But yeah. And then, I mean, you know, obviously, as we are recording this now, it's not long recently been announced that the date has shifted back to September, which actually is better for a majority of our members, mainly because pricing isn't available earlier in the year. So we, along with the organisers, really hoped that it would work out for June and or July. But in reality, I think they've done a really good job with the help of Boyd Douglas Davis to actually really get under the skin of what it is we need as an industry. And so we are looking forward to Glee in September, definitely.
So I think that's a really good example of the organisers listening to what the industry needed and responding.
Definitely.
Can I just ask a quick question about Glee? One of the things people always talk about is, why is it a 3-day event rather than just two?
Well, obviously, historically, it's been 3 days. But also, I think from an exhibitor's point of view, it's a hell of an investment just for 2 days. You need to maximise the opportunity for people to get there and to come to the stand. But yeah, it's an ongoing debate. I don't think we're ready for a 2-day event yet. If a buyer comes to the show and shops it properly, they need time to go around it because there's a lot to see there. So that, I think we need to encourage, we need to work with the organisers to encourage greater attendance and more dwell time at the event as well, and make sure people, use the time carefully and plan their time there, definitely.
So if you're a new exhibitor at Glee, any top tips on how they should go about it?
I think make sure you take advantage of every opportunity that the organisers present. There's often quite a lot of free opportunities to get promoted because they are looking for content to help promote the event. And I can see some of that happening already. Keep an eye out on that. Look for any free PR opportunities. Take advantage of Glee Daily News. Keep an eye out for our hosted buyer events as well, because that's particularly good for new businesses into the sector. We have an area called the GEMA Business Village as well. So sometimes buyers will seek that out because that tends to be the newer emerging businesses that take space there, and get your key messages and your pricing. Make sure you've got your pricing.
That's brilliant. Thank you. I was wondering what your thoughts are about women's representation within the horticultural industry. The Hort Week's People of the Year 2023 only had 2 women listed out of about 20 originally, although I saw that suddenly went up, and I think that's probably to do with quite a few comments from people. But how do you feel women as a whole are represented in horticulture?
Well, I think just going to your question about the Hort Week, I try not to pay too much attention to those, really, because I think they can be a little bit subjective and perhaps not that scientific when they're put together. But then I would say that because I wasn't on it. So,
We'll get nominating you.
And in terms of sort of women's representation, I mean, yes, I run GEMA. I've been running it for 10 years. And for the first time this year, we actually have a female president and a female vice president. So we have Jenny Douthwaite from Prima as our president, and we have Kate Ebbins from CAPI Europe as our vice president. So that's GEMA. And it, if you look at the HTA, there's Fran Barnes has come in to run the HTA. And then we've also got in their senior leadership team, you know, Jennifer Feasey, Elia Johnston, who are all taking key roles. Jennifer Feasey particularly is really driving forward in terms of parliamentary sort of engagement and doing a fabulous job. In terms of Garden X, you've got Amanda Sizer Barrett, who's been running that for a number of years. And then there's another trade body called LOFA, Leisure and Outdoor Furniture Association, and Gina Hind is sort of running that. And then the YPHA, Young People in Horticulture Association, two of the three founding members are female, Natalie Porter and Molly Higginson. So, you know, I think there is a lot of women in influential roles, you know, in that sort of area. What I don't see is a proliferation of sort of female business owners and entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And I do feel that side is still very male dominated. And I, these are my personal views, so you might want to edit them out if you don't agree. But I just think, I think the fact that it's still very male dominated in that sort of entrepreneurial role, I just think it probably reflects the pressures and expectations that are placed on women in both a in the business and work environment and career and the home. And, you know, despite their level of success at work, women are still very much expected to manage the home and domestic life as well. And so I do think there's a limit to how well you can actually reach your potential in your career, you know, if you are trying to juggle the two. That's my personal view. I think that is the reality, unfortunately. And that's not to say that these women aren't out there, but I think they're just few and far between. And I don't know what the answer is to that, really. One thing I did think, there's plenty of female gardeners. I do not think it's about time we had a female lead on Gardener's World.
Well, that was going to be one of my questions. Because Monty Don's going to have another year at the helm of Gardener's World, I just think that's such a shame. They're really missing out on changing the way that it is and always has been. And Phil and I were talking earlier, Love Your Garden is Alan Titchmarsh, and the main representation is so male-dominated. But within business, I think, as you say, is doing really well. GEMA, the HTA, it's really good to see so many women are in charge.
Yeah.
So are there any common misconceptions about the garden sector that you'd like to dispel?
I think gardening still has a sort of old-fashioned, and it's only for the elderly. I think and the general public probably think that. And I think perhaps there's an element of truth in that you have to have time to garden. And so, you know, and as a pastime, it's often empty nesters that do pick up the challenge of gardening and have a bit more time to garden. But we are seeing so many more younger people recognise the joy of gardening and build it into the earlier stages of their life and sort of embrace it within their lifestyle. So I think that bodes well for the future. You know, I've already talked about all the sort of activity around social media channels, and the followers that you get on Instagram, for example, are all ages. So, you know, I do think that bodes well. And I think, you know, as an industry, again, garden centres, people sort of don't like that, you know, phrase, I suppose. But I think we are leading the way, and some of the garden centres out there are absolutely fabulous destination retail centres. And you can see the way they sort of name themselves, home and garden, you know, garden lifestyle or whatever, you know, they're trying to move away from that garden centres tag. So I think there's a few areas there that perhaps a little bit of a misconception.
Yeah, but I think those barriers are definitely being broken down. And I think social media has had a lot to do with that, definitely.
Yeah.
there's so many young people that are engaged through that. And even TikTok has, you know, really kind of exploded with gardening advice as well.
What are some of the trends or developments in the garden sector that you believe will have a major impact in the coming years?
So I think when you're looking at trends, we actually work with a trends and insight organisation called Scarlet Opus, who are sort of trends experts and create some bespoke content for our members to use in their sort of development and marketing plans. And I'm from a marketing background, so I love this. I love this stuff. But I think if we're looking at sort of looking into next year, medium, you know, short to medium term, we'll continue to sort of see products that bring gardeners sort of closer to nature, offering sort of rewilding solutions. You know, we're still seeing lots of wildflower seed mixes, which will continue to be popular. Lots of natural solutions. We haven't mentioned sustainability once yet. I think that's probably a given now.
Yeah.
You know, there are so many natural and more sustainable solutions around there. So I think that's probably already had a major impact. You know, lots of natural solutions, lots of, you know, additives to work with peat-free compost, things like that. But I think, you know, I say this, the sort of short to medium term, we've still got this sort of daily onslaught of turbulent world news. And I think, thankfully, the sanctuary of the home and garden will continue to be a really important sort of place and refuge. So we'll still see sort of products and offers around sort of mood boosting and wellbeing solutions for the home and garden, your sort of peaceful, reflective colours, that sort of thing. But when we start to look a little bit further into the future, I think that's when we'll probably start to get quite interesting. I think, you know, as businesses need to really consider their sort of brand positioning and their product positioning for millennials now. Millennials are the dominant category. I know we've still got a big, you know, plus 40 market and audience, but when you look at the population growth, millennials will be the next, and obviously Gen Z, the, you know, coming in as well. Mm-hmm. And they have a whole new set of values that that businesses and certainly manufacturers need to consider. You know, consumerism is probably replaced by purposeful consumption. Bit of a mouthful, but it's all,
I like that.
Yeah, it's all about purchasing decisions that are informed by a consumer's value. Repairability, making products that are designed in to be repaired and maintained, which are sort of more desirable features, I think, going forward, as opposed to built-in obsolescence. I think businesses have to look to be more sustainable in their sort of business models, leaving the environment better than they found it. And there was this phrase that, again, as climatarian diet. Have you heard of that one?
No.
And that's a focus on, you know, food that it looks at reducing the carbon footprint and being very mindful of where the food we eat comes from. So it's considering the climate as, you know, in terms of the food chain. And then universal and adaptive design. So looking at inclusivity, you know, that becomes an expectation for brands, you know, and the brands have to be, have a deeper understanding of diversity, considering age, gender, ability, culture, ethnicity. So all of those things now start to see it coming through, but it was going to have an impact on gardening as well. And then, but I think the most exciting thing is AI. It's still a topic that I really need to understand a little bit more about, but, you know, for sure designers are going to start using, or well, they're probably already using.
We already are.
There you go. We're already there. But I think if you're designing gardens or you're designing products or just the visuals are going to become so much more organic and, you know, and perhaps dreamlike because people are living more virtually. They're living in the virtual world as well as the real world. So the real world will need to reflect the virtual world. So lots more organic shapes and colours and, you know, things like that. And that's what people will want to replicate in their home and gardens. So, I'd really like to get under the skin of AI a bit more and understand how that's going to impact. But I certainly see from a visual point of view, that's going to be what people are going to be looking for in the future. Phil, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that as well.
No, I think you're right. I think it's just been an explosion over the last year. I mean, AI has just come in and totally dominated a lot of definitely marketing activity, but all sorts of things. And I think it is only going to increase, the use of AI. It's going to revolutionize pretty much every industry.
We did a social post recently and we thought we'd trial it with AI that generated the copy.
Right.
And we did it anyway. I mean, it wasn't great. It still had a way to go. It was so flowery and, it just didn't sound like anybody was actually writing
right.
it. So there's still a little bit of a way to go. But
yeah.
It was interesting as an experiment. So you'll have to see. Go back on our LinkedIn post, see if you can figure out which one it was.
Absolutely, I'll have to have a look.
I think it's still got plenty of posts, so the computers...
Oh, there you go.
The algorithms obviously liked it.
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Vicky, for taking the time to talk to us today. We've covered so many topics. It's really been a whistle-stop tour, but we've valued your insight and opinion, and it's been really excellent to talk to you today. I've loved learning about your idea for an entrepreneurial startup fund. So we'll have to keep an eye out for that and see whether you manage to get that off the ground. And also the idea that the next generation of consumers are moving away from that consumerism to, what did you say, a purposeful consumption. That idea that their purchasing decisions are being informed by a new set of consumer values.
No, I like that too. I do. Especially this year when the biggest selling plants are bedding, which although are, generally pretty good value and very colourful, aren't really the best for the environment and wildlife. But I do think that will start to change. It has to start to change as we move on. And as you were talking about the millennials and even the Gen Zers, that's not where they're going. So I think the garden centres have got to be ready for all that change. They really have to.
Once again, Vicky, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, could I ask a small favour? Please take the time to like, share and review us on your podcast platform of choice. It really does make a difference and will help others to find us too. To keep up to date with the latest happenings from the Underground, head over to Facebook and join the discussion in the Underground Podcast Group, or sign up to our email newsletter at theunderground.fm. We really do appreciate you listening, as without you, there would be no point to this podcast. And we want to hear from you. So if you have a topic or a question you'd like us to cover, drop us a line. Kate Turner, the Gardener Guru, is a horticulturalist, garden consultant, presenter and influencer. To find out more, check out her website at gardenerguru.co.uk. Phil Wright is a founding partner of Wright O'Bara, a creative marketing agency specialising in the home and garden sectors. And for anyone bringing a new product to market, they've created a handy 7-step guide to take your product from zero to hero. Find out more at writeobara.com.